This is the Eurosnob Podcast.
I'd like to welcome everybody into another episode of the Eurosnob Podcast. Off to a rough start today. All right. We're back. It's been a few weeks for me. AJ and Bill took, handled everything for us on the last episode. So I'd like to see how you guys are doing tonight. AJ, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. Just got back from a little gym session, because for those of you who have gotten married or are getting married, you gotta look good for one day for the rest of your marriage, and then it's kind of downhill from there. So how about you, Bill? How are you doing today?
Well, it's a funny segue, because I was having a decent day. I was just telling Ian about when you get married, make sure that the county stamps your marriage certificate, or else you might have some insurance issues when your wife starts a new job and you try to go on the insurance. I was dealing with some of that before. It was crazy.
A little more complicated than my day. I'm just starting some kitchen renovation, so that's always fun. That's always fun. So, I don't know if anybody really saw it, but I threw a little quick live video on Twitter a couple hours ago, just kind of giving a heads up on what we were looking at getting into in the podcast tonight. For those of you that didn't see that, we're going U.S. U.S. soccer, that's kind of the big topic that's out there right now. But before we do jump into that, I know we kind of want to throw a couple thoughts on Arsenal, since, Arsenal is our team. So, just for some thoughts on the recent games, we'll send it over to Alex. What do you got, man?
Yeah, it's been a rough stretch for the Gunners lately. So we haven't spoken since the loss to United, draw away at Southampton, and then the draw against West Ham. And the United game kind of sticks out amongst all of those, just given the crazy amount of chances that we created in that game. But then it really didn't fall our way. But ultimately, we kind of were the architects of our own doom with that one. Two big defensive errors within, 10, 15 minutes, and then you're behind the eight ball and chasing the game. And that's, on a different day, yeah, we might have gotten a draw at least. But quite frankly, if you go down 2-0 to a team like United, you shouldn't expect to win. So it was frustrating. We would hope that the team would bounce back, against Southampton and West Ham. But, it's something we'll get into a little bit. Just we rotated the squad a little bit against West Ham, cost us there. Southampton, I didn't get to see the whole game. I was on a flight back from Mobile, Alabama at the time, so I didn't get to see that game. But all in all, really bad stretch and kind of drifting further and further away from the top teams. What about you, Bill? What are your kind of general thoughts on what we've seen over the past 2 weeks, I'd say?
I mean, you hit the United game on the head. Defensive errors, and I kind of was saying, I don't know if it was yesterday on Twitter, why has Koscielny been, just making dumb decisions throughout the entire season? And somebody tweeted me that it was, Wenger not, handling his Achilles issue appropriately. And, just to kind of sum it up quick, it's hard for me to kind of judge any individual player on Arsenal, because I was giving Alexis a hard time, even Iwobi, I give a hard time, and, Coquelin deserves it. We all know that. But beyond him, I don't think it's fair to really judge any of these players. A lot of them played out of position. I mean, Monreal's been center back. I mean, I don't know. I just find a lot of problems with what it is. And I think until Wenger is gone, which, I think will be soon, I just think it's going to be a problem. Ian, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you there. I mean, I'm not quite as quick to take the blame off of the players and say you really can't judge it.
Right.
Because, there comes a point in time when you're a professional footballer, you're a professional athlete. There's things that you should be able to control regardless of your managerial situation. And there's been a lot of those individual errors that, especially in the United game, cost us, that's not anything that I'm going to pin on Wenger. But your point kind of as a whole, I definitely don't disagree with that. I think it's something that, are these players that are on our team, are they good enough to actually compete for a title? I think that's kind of where it comes in, what you said, Bill, is that I don't think we really know, right? I think that's you. I don't know. I mean, do they have enough talent to win a title? Maybe. There's a lot of talent on that side, but for some reason it's just not coming together. So I don't know if that's kind of where you were going with it, but that's kind of where I pick up on it and say that mm-hmm. I don't think we know the overall ability or potential of the squad for as long as Wenger's in there.
Yeah, and I think the side as it is not a cohesive unit, and it wasn't necessarily put together as one. That's the biggest issue for me. It's a lot of disjointed parts that don't necessarily fit together. You know, I love Granit Xhaka, but he's been put in a position to fail this season. I mean, so much of the midfield load is on him, because while Ramsey's had a good attacking season, ultimately he's left Xhaka exposed defensively. You know, Xhaka's been, you know, he's had some issues with his passing, and he's also slow to react on the ball. So if he gets pressed, he's not quick enough to react like Santi might have been in that similar position. There's too many players in the side right now that are kind of coasting. The first one that comes to mind for me is Bellerin. He's young, but the youth excuse kind of fades away after a while. He's been a starter for more than two seasons now. I've really not seen the growth in his game. You know, he's a little too passive. Defensively, his positioning is suspect. He's too reliant on his pace rather than any sort of technical ability. But again, like Bill mentioned, you really don't know how much of this comes down to the manager and the way he sets his team up. And, you know, I would look at the West Ham game as an example. You know, I didn't get to see the whole game, but I watched bits and pieces. And, you know, you rotate the team, but that means you also change the complete way you're playing, because you're playing with Giroud up top. All of a sudden, you're trying to whip in crosses, and, you know, you got Alexis trying to whip in crosses, and you got Maitland-Niles playing out wide as a left back. I mean, it's just a mess. I don't feel like there's a coherent strategy at this point. I kind of feel like, and this has been an accusation against Arsene Wenger, and Ian, I'd love to get your take on this. It's just sometimes he tells his players just go do something, you know, go express yourselves, but not really with a very firm, tangent plan in mind. And I know you're a big Arsene Wenger fan, but I mean, it's getting harder and harder these days, given how things have unfolded.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, when you look at the Premier League, you look at the diversity in tactics that teams play. I mean, every team, almost every single team, changes how they play based on their opponent. And it's just like we throw our guys out there and say, go do whatever you want. This is how you're going to line up. Just play, you know what I mean? And we don't adapt. And I don't think that's anything that – I don't think that you can't be successful in today's game, especially in the Premier League, because it is all so competitive. You can't be that way and be successful to the level that we want to be successful at. You know, that's kind of – I think it's as simple as that. I mean, you have to be able to adapt. So well- –
Yeah, I think that's why, like, I don't like to talk about too many of the individual players if I don't have to, just because, like, I think eventually, once the cycle keeps repeating over and over again, something has to change. And you can't – I know this is, like, the old cliche saying, you can't, like, get rid of all the players or the whole team or anything like that. But, you know, at some point, he's got to be held accountable. I mean, he blamed the – fixture congestion. He's been playing two different squads the entire time. So what is there to be congested about? I just think there is a point where you do need to motivate your players in certain games and play to your opponent, and he doesn't do it. I think he thinks his guys can just go out there and win. It's arrogant in a way, but not like it's just confusing, and I think it's just not working anymore, like you said, in today's climate.
And you look at Pep Guardiola's Manchester City. They're a more talented team than we are, but they also go out with a very clear plan as to how they play. When they press as a unit. And the moments they do sit back intelligently and then wait for their chance to counter. You don't see that sort of tactical innovation from Arsene Wenger anymore. Mm-hmm. And the squad isn't quite elite enough to where their talent can mask his tactical deficiencies, you know? He doesn't have the tactical awareness of a Conte or a Guardiola, but he also doesn't have the squad talent of a Chelsea or a City. United, yeah, you could argue we might be on par with them talent-wise, but I don't know. I mean, for me, and I know this is kind of more of an overarching thing, I didn't, you know, like I said, I didn't get to watch most of the Southampton and West Ham games, but ordinarily, like a few months ago or a couple of years ago, that would have bothered me. Like, I would have stayed off of Twitter all day to avoid the result and then gotten home and watched it. But then once, you know, like for these games, you know, I had no inclination to avoid the result because I just had a bad feeling. It's kind of sucked that enthusiasm, that anticipation out of a lot of these games for me. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
I mean, for me, I'll tell you that, you know, in the past, I would have done whatever it took to find a stream to watch that West Ham game. Dude, it's kind of like, one of the best things about sports is that anticipation that you get before you go and watch a game, that excitement of like, okay, you know, here we go, let's win this game, but you're nervous because you don't know what's going to happen. There's none of that right now with this side. You know that it's going to be, you know, if we win, it's not going to be anything fancy. It's going to be a boring display because that's all it ever is with us lately. And more likely, we're going to drop points to a team you shouldn't drop points to. Or we're going to go and we're going to play really well but not score and still lose. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there any other outcome that I didn't just cover there? So, no. Right? So
they like, pretty much nailed it, yeah.
Exactly. So we know what's going to happen. We know that we're not going to win the title. We know that we're going to finish somewhere between third and seventh. So
it's the same. So it's the broken record, man. And you could just literally, since I've been on Twitter, which has been a decent amount of time, honestly, I can't remember the time that it started where you just talked about the same issues every season in some way, shape, or form. And eventually there's, you know, I'm a math guy, common denominator. And that's why I said what I said before to keep it simple, because I don't know what else to change at this point.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll let you guys decide how bold of a take it is. But I think that this season, it's Arsene Wenger's last season. He'll be done at the end of this year. I know he's on a 2-year contract, but the reason that I think they did that was because if you give him a second year, there's not the questions coming up at the end of the season. If you give him a 1-year contract, half the season is all the same questions he dealt with last year. I think he's done at the end of the year. You're seeing the changes in the front office of the club. We've brought in a new head scout. We brought in a director of football. We're starting to put the pieces in place to be able to cope without him. And quite frankly, I think he's done. I think this is his last year. I think that they realized that they screwed up and didn't put those people in place in time. And they said, hey, we need you to stick around for another year. We'll give you a 2-year thing, so there's no questions. But I think he's done at the end of the year.
Yeah, I don't think that's outrageous at all. I think based on the timeline of how things have unfolded, it makes a lot of sense. You know, last summer, we began to see some of these structural changes, bringing in the contract specialist from the bicycle team. And then now you've seen the scout come in from Dortmund. They're not calling him director of football, really, but whatever he is doing, the guy from
it's
Barcelona.
Essentially that position. He was a director of football at Barcelona, so you assume he's going to do a pretty similar thing here.
Exactly. So he's, you know, you've got someone to identify the talent, and now you've got someone to close the deals.
Which apparently that's what he's good at, is closing the deals.
Which is great, because that's what we suck at. So it's, now, like, those are things that Wenger has kind of been handling, and you hope things are being put into place. I'm going to throw a scenario out to you guys. I'm not going to take credit for this idea. I would love to, but I'm not going to. You know, we got a World Cup this summer. Yogi Löw, Germany. After the World Cup, you know, after the World Cup ends, he steps in, takes over the Arsenal job. The World Cup can kind of be his last hurrah with Germany. Takes over Arsenal, brings over some of those German superstars. Some of that young talent there, and we kind of go into the next generation of Arsenal.
Don't get my hopes up.
Yeah, that sounds like a dream to me, man. You know, but you said we had a World Cup this year. I don't even know what you're talking about with that, because I don't know.
Oh yeah, no, things. I mean, one country's missing from World
Cup. Yeah, but I like that scenario. If Löw came to Arsenal, I'd be on board 100% in that scenario. And I also do think he'll leave at the end of the year.
But do you guys not think that's plausible, though? Like, I mean, who else really is a realistic candidate? Like, as a big-time club coach, I mean, I saw people throw out the name Arteta today. I think in a few years, that would be amazing because I think that guy's a football genius, and he's got that Pep Guardiola mentality. I just don't foresee him taking over this summer if Wenger were to leave. I think we'd need someone in place for 3-4 years first.
And even if it's not Jurgi Love, it could be another big name guy from another national team as well. I think the idea of that makes a lot of sense, and it really could be where Arsenal's going with it. But that kind of does bring us to our main topic of tonight. It's really, you know, you had to bring up the World Cup. I was hoping we could make it through an entire episode talking about the U.S. national team without really even mentioning the World Cup, kind of forgetting about the fact that we're not going. And no, it's just kind of glossing over the terribleness of the situation. But there's a lot going on with the U.S. Soccer Federation right now.
Can I just say one thing real quick?
Yes.
Even you saying that, we're 2 months after the fact. I still don't believe it.
No, I don't either. I don't want to accept that fact yet. I'm not ready to.
I mean, Bill, like I'm like incredulous when I'm hearing that right now.
That's what I was saying. You said World Cup. I don't even know what's going on because
what even is that? Yeah.
What tournament of soccer of nations? Oh, pretty big, huh? Oh, interesting.
Oh, you mean the 4-team one that they're going to put in the U.S. with us in Italy and Chile?
The participation tournament.
Yes, that one. You know, that's the one you're talking about, right?
The good news is Michael Bradley won an MLS Cup, so everything's good. We're all set. Nailed it. We're good. U.S. soccer's in great hands. Sorry, it didn't mean to interrupt.
What a future we'll have with him. I mean,
oh God, it makes me sad.
hey, but you know what? On a positive note, they got something right. Christian Pulisic, Player of the Year.
Yeah,
there was 94% of the votes, though.
That's a problem.
That is a problem.
I mean, yes, 94 is a big number, but
it's a problem.
Yeah, you know what's a bigger number? 100, and that's what it should have been.
Right.
I'm trying to figure out what goes through the mind of the 6% who didn't vote for him. First of all, what went through their mind? Secondly, and I'm scared to ask this, who did they think had a better season?
That right there, I mean, who? You said who. You're kind of talking about the players, but I want to know who the hell voted for somebody other than him. But you know what? I would be really, really put a lot of money on the fact that it's the journalists now that we're seeing come out in full force now. For some reason in the last week or so, really getting that MLS biased hype train up and going again. I just want to know who it is. I want to know who it was.
The conspiracy theory is running deep in me. It's just coming out because I was talking with somebody about this. I just think that they see the Twitter, they know the Twitter, they're on it, and they just get these guys in place to start writing articles that are pro-agenda, and they will spew and dismay anything. And just a bunch of topics that have just recently come up, like you said, in the last week and even 2 weeks. All of a sudden, all these articles and tweets and things are coming out that are trying to refute them and everything like we were talking about before. Blows my mind. I don't know. Alex, what do you think, man?
Yeah, it starts with the presidential election. I know, Ian, you were kind of getting into that, but we've just seen like this completely obvious slant towards, or I shouldn't say towards, against certain candidates. And I'm talking Wijnaldum, and then I'm talking Paul Laporte. You know, these are the two guys who have been the most outspoken. I'll be the first to admit some of the stuff Paul Laporte says makes no sense to me.
Right.
But he's asking questions, and he's taking all sorts of crap from people. Wijnaldum is taking all sorts of crap from people because everyone's like, oh, you know, how are you going to do this or how are you going to do that? Meanwhile, Mr. Status Quo, Martino, Kathy Carter, no one's asking these people any tough questions. You know, Kathy Carter, you see her showing up on ESPN FC when they didn't give that same courtesy to any of the other candidates because of, you know, Kathy Carter is connected with some, you know, Soccer United Marketing, which is connected with MLS.
Which is connected with the U.S. Federation.
Exactly. So it's if you have your eyes open, you shouldn't be missing what's happening right now. And kind of getting into the presidential stuff, I saw that U.S. Soccer, the board of directors, have taken steps to change the responsibility of the president. And now they're going to have, they want to create a general manager type position with that person kind of looking over the national team. And so that would kind of take away some of the powers from the president. Now, it seems like a non-status quo candidate is gaining a lot of momentum for president. All of a sudden, let's take some power away from the president. Bill, it's funny how that works, isn't it?
Like I said, it's nuts with conspiracy theories, but you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, and once is an accident, two's a trend, three's a problem, and something comes up, they do something to counteract it. You just made a great point. Oh, wow. All of a sudden, president doesn't need to have as much power. We need to get a GM in there. And I'm sure that that GM will be elected before the new president were to take over. There'll be something in the mix, I'm sure. But it's amazing the lengths that these people are going to regain whatever they're trying to hold on to. You know, it's wild.
You can tell that they're absolutely terrified that their status quo is about to get, it's about to get blown up. You know, and you kind of look at it this way, it just, again, it ties into the whole, we're calling it a conspiracy theory. You know, we'll get to more specifics about the presidential candidates. I just can't get off this conspiracy theory thing right now, but you know what? I don't think it's a conspiracy theory. It's an actual thing. I mean, look at this. I just have to say, Andrew Doss from the New York Times, he wrote an article talking about the presidential candidates that were approved. Right. And in his tweet where he's talking about, he says, so what have we learned? It's pretty damn easy to get on the USSF ballot. Shame on every fan moaning about Sunil in 2017 who never got off the couch to challenge him. When I read this, I almost threw my phone through the window. I lost my goddamn mind when I saw this. Like, are you kidding me? This is somebody who gets paid for this opinion. Yeah. And I bet you he's getting paid handsomely.
Exactly.
By the Federation, MLS. Like, it's just absolutely mind-boggling that somebody can put their name and attach it to this, put it out in the public and say, yes, I'm proud of this. Like, this represents me. Mm-hmm. How can you do that?
As a journalist, how do you have any sort of self-respect and do that?
As a non-journalist who has a podcast and every once in a while writes a blog, maybe four times ever. I couldn't even put my name out there attached to something like that.
I'd literally have to use like an alternate name. There's a word for that. I just can't think of it.
Hack.
But like it's crazy when I read that because I looked. I'm like, wait, doesn't this guy write for the Times, the New York Times, one of the biggest newspapers in the world?
Right.
And somehow he's putting this on the fans and saying, oh, why didn't all these people get off their couch? And then saying stuff like, there's all these so-called experts on their computers, like. Newsflash, sunshine, like all these people who are in power right now have led this program to where it is right now. So maybe if you started listening to these people whose voices you've silenced for years and pushed out aside the mainstream and kind of called them the extremist of some kind, maybe if you listen to those people, we wouldn't be in this predicament right now.
Yeah, it's beyond frustrating. It amazes me. Every day I open Twitter, there is something new that is popping up that they're just defending, and it is just the blind defense. Like, even with some of the candidates, like, we were talking about all these things. Like, when Carter just started and announced her run, she was immediately on ESPN, right? Like, I mean, that happened like almost the next day. Winald has been talking about this for months. I think Paul has been talking about it for months. I don't really follow him, but Winald, I do. And I mean, even Martino, I mean, throwing his hat in the ring, whatever. But none of these guys really, I mean, Martino had a chance, I guess, technically to talk about it. But like, none of them got interviewed by anybody. And then you have Lawless kind of making fun of it, almost interviewing them, you know, on Twitter. He's become the officiant somehow. So I don't know. It's just, there's so many things you can go into about it. I don't even know where to start.
Well, it's funny to me, and Ian, I want to throw this to you. Paul Lapointe came out recently and said, like, basically saying, like, the U.S. soccer media is somewhat complicit in all this shit that's going on. And you immediately saw this response from everyone in the U.S. soccer media, like Grant Wall and all those folks. And they were saying stuff like, oh, how could he say that? It's so outrageous. Like, I mean, who can even believe this stuff and this and that? Like, it was unanimous. Like, they all just came out at the same time and said it, literally proving his point that they all come out to further this agenda. And make no mistake about it, the agenda is MLS, SUM, USSF. The three are connected way too much for there not to be a severe conflict of interest. And I mean, you know, while LaPointe's asking these questions, you know, he's getting attacked from all ends, but he's not wrong, is he? I mean, I guess the encouraging thing for me is now people are starting to see it. Like, people are, like, I think, Ian, you said people are starting to realize that the status quo needs to come crumbling down.
Right. They definitely are. And that's why we're seeing such a strong defense publicly put out there by the MLS and the SUM and the Federation people, because they feel it. They know it's there. You know, Paul LaPointe, he wasn't, like, overly vocal, I don't think, right off the bat. But as everything has gone along and he started to catch, you know, he's seen it. He's even come out. I don't remember what the other candidate was, but he just came out and said that the process of the election is rigged. You know, I forget which one it was, and he came out and he's like, it's the whole thing is a joke. And I think that as these candidates, especially LaPointe, as they're getting further and further into the process, they're seeing how backwards and how rigged and how corrupt all of it is. And they're starting to ask the questions publicly. And, you know, yeah, it's a good thing that LaPointe is asking those questions publicly. I don't know how I feel about him as a candidate. I mean, I think he's asking the right questions. I think a lot of his answers are good. But, you know, the fact that you're seeing this big defense come out against him specifically is because he's asking the right questions. He's making them nervous.
And you just saw, like, within the past couple of days, Steve Gans, another one of the candidates, came out and wrote a letter to U.S. Soccer accusing them of engaging in unfair election practices and asking for an outside agency to oversee it. And, of course, U.S. Soccer Federation called these allegations vague and unsupported. But literally, if this many candidates are seeing a problem in the process, and the only ones you're not hearing complaints from really are Kyle Martino and Kathy Carter and Carlos Cordero, really, funny, all three are very much status quo. It's funny, like, how they have no problem with this process. And I'm not going to pretend like I know the ins and outs of U.S. soccer. I can only go off what I read and using a little bit of deductive reasoning that I have. Not much, but a little bit. Put two and two together, guys. I mean, the status quo protects the status quo, and the more they do that, the more they continue to control the system.
Yeah. Yeah, my buddy Martino, baby. You know, just styling that hair and going with what's been the problem all this time. You know what I mean? It's, you know, as crazy as Wijnaldum may seem, you know, a lot of the stuff that he's been saying, I've been following him a lot, has been on point, and at least he's been consistent with what he's saying, and it's different. It looks like it can go into a more positive direction, but it just amazes me how they're, like somebody said before, they just come in droves to, like, defend each other, and you just see the same things, and you're like, how is this going to get better if you keep this the same? The simple logic behind it blows me away. It's like, I mean, I get they don't want to admit fault maybe by changing it up, but it not making a World Cup is a pretty big deal. Like, you think they would care about that, and money wouldn't be an issue or things of that nature, you know?
Yeah, and you know, again, it's the same kind of thing that you were talking about. We've all been talking about here. You know, kind of goes back to Kathy Carter. I just want another thing here that just shows you how intertwined and how deep this runs. I mean, she's a president of SUM, Soccer United Marketing. She's the president of that. And then she announces she's running. Cool. That's fine. That's perfectly within her right. But then she's, like you said, instantly on ESPN. Nobody else has been on there. No one else has been given that shot. And if you, I don't know if you guys saw any of the questions that were, you know, slow pitched at her. I'm not even going to call softballs because they were slow pitched. Mm. They're set on a tee. Like, there was not a difficult question asked for the entire interview.
Yeah, that calling them softballs would be an insult to softballs.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it's, you know, you have to wonder how long they can keep this up. And hopefully it's only for maybe another month. What is the election in January? February?
I think it's in February.
February, yeah. I think we got like 2 months. That sounds right. You know, I don't know how long they can keep this up. And, you know, one of two things is going to happen. If one of the new progressive people gets elected, then you're going to see changes that way. But I also think if one of the if Kathy Carter, if for example, a status quo gets elected and put in there, I don't think that the other candidates are just going to kind of, you know, wash their hands and walk away from it. I think those candidates are going to continue to fight to fix U.S. soccer. It's obviously not something you could fix with U.S. soccer. You have to go to other areas, and I don't know where those areas are, but I think at least they're going to keep pushing for it. I don't know if you guys get the same impression that I do on that.
I do to some extent. At least I hope they continue to press, because my concern is that you get a Kathy Carter who takes office and then the candidates who were asking these questions just stop. So I hope it's not one of those situations where these questions are only being asked for a short time, you know, for a short time frame. But I think I'd like to think, and Bill, I'd love to hear your thought on this, that maybe the guys like Wijnaldum and Lapointe have asked enough questions and brought up enough of these issues where now even more of the casual fans are thinking, hey, you know what? They might be onto something there.
Now, you bring up a lot of instances that I've been running into lately. Like, I've seen a lot of these people who kind of follow it and kind of stay with it. Like, just that they support the team. They don't get into, like, the politics and the behind the scenes and what's going on and the inner workings. And they're kind of like, man, this has really been kind of messed up. You know what I mean? And you're hearing a lot of, like you said, the casual fan coming into the fold to kind of get their opinion on it and say, hey, this does need to change. And that's the thing, because there are a lot of people out there still who are kind of just like, oh, everything's fine. It's not a big deal. There's no problem. But more and more, you know, there's momentum behind the movement that, you know, there is something wrong. And I hope those people do speak up, because if enough of the bigger talking heads stay talking and you get enough of the, you know, interested people and average fans to speak up, there may be a chance to have some true change, hopefully. I mean, that's what, you know, we're all hoping actually does happen, you know, right?
Yeah. And, well, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I mean, we're talking about change a lot. What, that's a very loaded question, but what kind of change are you hoping to see, realistically speaking?
Well, I'll go ahead.
Yeah. It's exactly. You said it's a loaded question. I mean, where do you start, first of all? You know, ultimately, if there's one thing, you know, that needs to happen as far as change, interest, and that the U.S. Soccer Federation, the way it is now, is set up to support MLS in some. That's the way it's set up right now. That's the way it operates. That needs to change first and foremost. You know, hands down, that's the thing that if you're looking for one thing that needs to change, that's it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, I mean, I know we've gone into it in the past, and I know we will again. I mean, that conversation of every little thing that's wrong, sure, that can go on forever. We could spend 2.5 hours, 3 hours talking about that. But it's just, when you just, you know, and it's coming out more and more that there's just beyond any doubt that that's how everything is set up. You know what I mean? I'll send your own question right back to you, Alex. I mean, where do you come out on that?
I mean, aside from the conflict of interest, I mean, it's got to be something at the grassroots, you know. It's got to be, I don't think you can start from the top and work your way down. I think you got to start at the bottom and work your way up. And, you know, I'm not a coaching expert by any stretch of the imagination, but maybe having a more uniform coaching development program for young coaches. And, you know, again, with the size of the country, yeah, it's hard to have a national style of play, but that doesn't mean you can't use what different regions are strong at. You know, it doesn't mean you can't form those into a coherent national team. And you have to find a way to incentivize playing young players. And, you know, it's easier said than done because, you know, coaches, especially at the higher level, like, you know, MLS and USL, they want to win to keep their job, which I get. But you also have to give these young players a chance to show what they can do. And it's funny that, you know, I read a comment from Josh Sargent, the U.S. under-17 forward who's now signed for Werder Bremen in Germany. And, you know, he was asked, like, why didn't you go to MLS? He said, no, you know, it would have been great. Everyone speaks English. It's really close to home. But they don't play young players. Like, it's difficult to get playing time as a young player. And I see Christian and I see Weston in Germany. And, you know, I'm thinking that could be me. And that's really interesting to me that a player in this country saying, hey, if I go to Germany, I've got a better chance of playing and breaking through. And look at Weston McKennie. I mean, he came from the Dallas Academy, I believe, took his chance abroad, broke through, and now he's a semi-regular in the Schalke side.
Yeah.
I don't know, Bill, what about you? What would you address with all of this?
I mean, I'm trying to think of the statistic that I saw to that point that you just brought up. Somebody brought up a statistic about the number of teenage players that play for MLS teams compared to the number of players that get regular starts that are under a certain age that are American that go abroad. You know what I mean? Like Pulisic and other players of that sort. So, I think that the whole mindset, this is why it's just such a broad topic. Like the whole way that it goes about, it needs to change. Because, I mean, what did it all start with? Bringing in the older kind of ready to retire foreign players to kind of bolster up the team. And they were still doing that up until a point, like with Pirlo and a couple other people. They've gotten some good young talent, though. Not super young, you know. And I really can't remember offhand many decent teenagers that have started, you know, for MLS teams. How old was Jordan Morris? I don't even remember how old
he came out of college, so 22, 23.
Right, so there you go. So there's that's like when you're trying to get ready to hit your prime almost like in the next couple of years after that. So I don't know. I think it needs to start the bottom or from the top and go all the way down to the bottom, vice versa, whichever way. I know that's how you set those up. So I don't know if you start with something like MLS and work your way down. I don't know if you start. I think you need to really start with the youth because it doesn't look too promising with things coming up. So you need to start making some World Cups. You need to get some youth development going and then maybe work on the MLS pro rel issues and go forward with that. I don't know.
You know, for me, though, I mean, it comes down to, like I said, starting at the top with that conflict of interest, because I think that's ultimately the root. I think that's the root of all the problems. And yes, I mean, there are, like you said, there are so many things that need to change, especially at the grassroots with, you know, pay to play and with the coaching. I mean, yeah, there are a lot of great coaches and you're never going to, yeah, sure. Unmute your mic just to cough. Yeah,
I thought I did the opposite there.
you're never gonna get a cohesive as far as style of play at the grassroots all the way across the country. That's not gonna happen because it is such a big, diverse country. But you can make these. You can make coaching. I don't call them degrees, certifications, whatever the hell you want to call them. Different levels. You can make them actually achievable. To get your AF level coaching course, that's easy. It's a online thing, you know, what is it, 30, 40 bucks. It's not difficult to get. But as you go up, I mean, if you want to even get your C license or your D or your B license, I mean, that's thousands and thousands of dollars in a week out of your life to travel and go somewhere else to take these courses. It's absolutely insane what you have to do to get these different certifications and the amount of money that it costs you to do it and the time it takes to do it. And like the time's not so much an issue, right? Because you want to make sure that these coaches are there and they're doing these things themselves and they understand it. So the time it takes to get it, that's not an issue. But the amount of money that has to be spent out of these coaches' pocket to get this additional training and and increased level of certifications, I mean, that's all there because the higher amount of money that they, you know, to take the course and to get the certification comes back to the federation. It's all about lining their pocketbooks, pay to play. I mean, you see it with the development academies, the U.S. development academies that are sponsored by and tied into the U.S. Soccer Federation. All that money funnels right back through U.S. Soccer, which in turn funnels through some, which, you know what I mean? So once you fix the conflict of interest and that, you know, that big problem at the top of everything, then you can start, you know, untangling all the roots of that have found their way down to the grassroots level. You know, you got to take it from the top and work your way back down. I mean, you can change all you want at grassroots now. You can say, oh, no more pay to play. Everybody's whatever, you know, take it all the way down to that level. But if you still have the issues on top, it's still going to be so incredibly political and so incredibly money-based as to who gets the promotions, who gets the opportunities, and you know, and that kind of thing. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just...
Dude, you're pumping me up, man. I want to go, like, storm the barracks, dude. I'm ready to just go flying right now. Because it's, you're right, though. It is a they do need top to bottom. I agree. That's...
Yeah, I think... I mean, yeah, I agree with the top to bottom thing. I do think in terms from a playing perspective, it has to start bottom to top. But maybe in terms of being able to make those changes, it starts at the top. So I see what you're going with that. And I think the coaching point you brought up about the cost of licenses is a really, really good one. Because I've seen that on Twitter from youth coaches who have said, like, look, it literally costs thousands of dollars. And this is my full-time job. And I can't afford to be paying $5,000-$6,000 to get this license, you know, when I'm making $30,000 to $40,000 a year as a youth coach, you know, like 20% of my income's going to this. It's just a mess. And I think there are so many people with their head in the sand. I mean, and I'm going back to something from 2 months ago, but when your national team coach fails to qualify for a World Cup and then says, there's nothing wrong with what we're doing, nothing needs to change, that should tell you everything you need to know about where U.S. soccer is. When someone can be that oblivious to the problems that we have and say, no, nothing's wrong, everything good, we're doing great, guys. It's mm-hmm. fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is certainly a problem. And then they bring him on TV.
I remember we got into that last time, but I'd be curious to hear your thoughts about that. Bruce on TV. Bill and I already touched on that, but I know you got some thoughts. I remember seeing them on Twitter.
Anybody who's watching this just can look at my face and will completely let you know how I feel about that. But if you're not, it goes back to the whole thing, how everything is so interconnected, how the federation's connected to some, which is connected to MLS, which is connected to ESPN. That's all it is, which is now connected to Fox through Disney, because Disney and Fox and now ESPN. The conspiracy web is getting bigger and bigger and bigger as we sit here.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's all just another one of those. It's their attempt to prop up their own and prop up their own product above everything else, whether it's good for the actual product or not.
And tying into that, because we're talking about Bruce Arena, I want to kind of transition to something that we've seen over the past couple of days. And I said this from the moment Bruce Arena was hired. He is going to favor MLS players. He only wants to call in primarily MLS players. He's not focused on players playing abroad. He said, and I was called paranoid. I was told, no, Bruce is so practical. He just wants to win. He's a tactical genius. He'll call in whoever it takes to win. So fast forward to this week, and Danny Williams came out with some comments, and I'm just going to read them to you. He was captain of the U.S. team when he went to when they played Portugal. He said, I heard from a few people that they tried to market the MLS a bit more in the World Cup qualifying games and get a name for the MLS. At the end of the day, it shouldn't be about that. It should be about quality and bringing the best players and having a plan. He said something else too. I don't have it in front of me. But basically, insinuating that MLS marketing had a, had a say in what happened. So he said, sorry, I'm pulling it up. He said, Bruce Arena emailed me and said, you're in the picture, but I haven't really seen you. This is someone who's played in the Bundesliga. This is someone who's played in the Champions League. I mean, this is, I don't know how you haven't seen him. You just weren't looking, for starters. And then, you know, he also brought up the thing about, like, the German-Americans and how there was concern about that. But, like, he's been playing at this high level for 8 years or so. And so these quotes came out, and Bruce Arena immediately came out and said, oh, that, you know, it's rubbish. We picked the best players from, you know, regardless of where they played, which is bullshit, but we all know that. And then I dug up a quote from a 2014 article when Bruce Arena said, the majority of the national team should come from Major League Soccer. So, and Ian, I'm going to tie it to something you have ready for us to go, but Jeff Carlisle on ESPN.
Mm-hmm. Jeff.
He said,
good this old idea, Jeff.
Oh my God, this fucking turd. He said,
I'm pretty sure we had some colorful words for what he looked like before the podcast started, but you know.
Well, that was Grant Wall, but they all look the same.
Oh, I'm sorry. He looks the exact same.
Jeff Carlisle basically said, it's like absurd to think that marketing would have anything to do with like Bruce Arena, like in favoring MLS players.
I actually have his exact tweet pulled up right here.
There you go. Bring it to me. Inject it into my veins right now.
This was after he came out and he said, responding to comments by Danny Williams, Bruce Arena says it's, quote, completely false that a desire to market MLS players influenced decisions. After that, he said, everyone can quibble about Arena's player selection, but the idea that marketing of MLS players influence his decisions is one I find to be absurd. And then Matthew Barone at Coach ABQ, don't know who he is, fires back and says, it's been going on for a while. Cruyff wrote, Jurgen Klinsmann, coach of the U.S. national side since 2011, often couldn't select the best possible team because he was obligated to include someone from each franchise. He also says, note proper use of franchise. He continues, it's very restrictive if you're a coach and something like that would delay your national side's development by years if it were to continue. So Carlisle fires back and he says, so what Cruyff said is that Klinsmann was so weak he couldn't stand up to MLS RE player selection. This is the same man who left Landon Donovan, biggest marketing machine in U.S. men's national team history, off the 2014 World Cup team. So even right there, he's talking about leaving Donovan off as a –
Ian's steaming right now.
Listen, man.
Ian's not having fires, a steamer. He's actually
I know. I'm going to take over because it fires me up. This whole thing about this Landon Donovan, listen, I am not denying the 2010 World Cup. I am not denying the World Cups the years before that. But in 2014, the man left the World Cup qualifying games to go find himself, quote unquote, right? Left the team during some games. Wanted to come back and play. Klinsmann didn't feel he was there. Get over it, MLS agenda people. Get over it. This is crazy. The guy could have stayed and played. He had to go take care of whatever he wanted to take care of, whatever. But don't come back and expect a spot because you're a marketing machine. Like, I mean, I get it. But at the same time, like, you know, it's bigger than that. And I don't think he would have been ready. I'm sorry. And I don't think it was a big deal either.
Correct me if I'm wrong about Donovan, though. Didn't it come out from somebody somewhere around the time that Klinsmann said you can come and play, that you can be on the side, but you're not going to start?
Right. I think that is accurate.
And then Donovan said, no, screw that. I'm not going to play.
Right. I believe that is also true.
Right. I don't know if that was ever actually confirmed because Donovan's never going to admit to it. Right. But
I mean, well, yeah, we'll never know with that. But then Donovan came out today and said, oh, this thing about an MLS bias is not true. I'm like, well, even if it was, would you admit to it for starters? But no. The gall
I just don't know how you can deny it.
Yeah, but the gall of Carlisle, first of all, to question Cruyff. I mean, if Johan Cruyff walked down the street, I'm not sure he'd know who or what a Jeff Carlisle is, you know? So, and then, you know, but like, I literally tweeted that the Bruce Arena quote to him when you're saying, oh, it's absurd that he would do this. And I'm like, well, your coach said this actually in 2014. Funny you should say that. And then one of the other MLS shills responded and he's like, oh, well, it's different saying that that the team should be this versus actually calling them in. Not really. If your coach has this trend of behavior where he clearly doesn't think dual nationals are Americans, he only favors MLS players, he's literally been coaching in MLS for all these years, it's really not unreasonable to think that he's only going to favor MLS players. I mean, look at some of the call-ups he made. You know, he's calling in the likes of Benny Failhaber. I'm still not sure who or what Dax McCarty is. I'm told it's a midfielder, but I'm not sure. I mean, it's like this is the kind of mediocre talent you were calling up. He had the gall to say that he would have played Miazga and Brooks in the World Cup. That's interesting. You didn't call up Miazga for any of these qualifiers, so right. I'm not sure how that would have happened. I mean, the guy is literally the personification of the status quo. I feel like my voice is like raised through if there's like a parabola of my volume, it would just be going up right now. I'm trying not to rant, but like it actually, I've said this for years. Like at this point, the national team is used to prop up MLS, and it should not be like that. Do you see this happen? No, like do you see this happening with Brazil? The Brazilian national team, how many players on that team are from the Brazilian league? The Argentinian team, how many players on the team are from the Argentinian league? Belgium, Chile, how many players are from those teams?
But you know the thing about that, though, is that all those players all start there. Not all of them, but a good number of them start in those leagues in their home country. They start breaking through at 16, 17, 18 years old, and then they go to the bigger leagues overseas. Right? That's how MLS should be.
Right. Yeah, it should function as a feeder league.
It should function as a feeder league. It should function to cultivate the youth and younger professional players that we have in this country. Well, that's how it should be.
Right. But like he said, the marketing machine. So that's what it is. Bring all the old retired players, bring the names over. But, you know what I mean? But that's what it is. They didn't. MLS is doing it. Everybody's doing it. They're not focusing on the right areas.
Well, let me ask you this, though. Like, if you're MLS and, you know, God knows that they're marketing geniuses, apparently, and that they know what right. they're doing, right? Because they just had was, but it was absolutely embarrassing for the MLS Cup final. I forget what the rating was, but it was absolutely embarrassing.
Like, it was probably about the equivalent of a SpongeBob rerun on Nickelodeon.
I really think it's probably about what it was. So, you know, they're marketing and media experts, so we can't question them. But how much more excited is a casual soccer fan from the U.S., are they going to get more excited about the next Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, Josh Sargent coming through MLS, or a 35-year-old Andrea Pirlo, or 40, however the hell old he was when he came over?
Yeah. No, I mean,
what are you going to get more excited about watching? Yeah. I'm going to be more excited about going to watch the 17-year-old kid that is he going to even who knows if he's going to be the next big thing. I mean, is he going to be another Freddie Adu? I'm still going to go watch the kid.
Yeah, they just start.
I'm still going to want to know.
Yeah, they started it off the wrong way. And I think with whatever money they're pulling in, and I think you mentioned how it just kept funneling back, you know, the machine is in full effect. And they have its little constituents all over in the form of media, former players, things like that, trying to, you know, keep control, I guess I should say. And it's something that definitely needs to be stopped. I can't even watch an MLS game. I think I saw, I don't know where it was. It might have been a Facebook memory or something. wasn't the MLS final played on like a Sunday with like the NFL or whatever, like right in the middle of the games? And then this one was on like a Saturday afternoon. Like, honestly, I didn't even know what was on. So my buddy texted me and was like, oh man, Bradley this or something, like making fun of him. And I was like, dude, I didn't even know the game was on. So like, it's bad. And I kind of feel bad about that, because this is like, it's not like snobbish, no pun intended, but it's like, I want to support the MLS. I want to watch exciting games. I want to get, you know, like, you know, follow the union, follow whoever and get pumped about it. But it's, I can't go and watch that kind of soccer watching the other soccer that I've seen. It's, sorry, like, I just can't do it.
And it's not just that, because I think there are some good things going on in MLS right now. And I'd
right. Atlanta, Atlanta's
Atlanta
nice.
United. I love what they're doing, signing these young players, right. You know, from South America, from Central America. I think that's a really smart way to go. Young players, you can market them, like Almiron. I know they got like a big offer for him, like $15 million from abroad, and they didn't sell him. The other problem is MLS makes it so hard for players to leave, you know? So if you're tied down to a long MLS contract, they're going to make it so difficult for you to leave, when really, and we said this earlier, if you want to be a feeder league, you know, like the Dutch league, where you produce tons of outstanding players, then you sell them abroad and you make money and you reinvest in your grassroots, in your academy, so you can make three more of those kinds of players. That's how it works in a lot of these countries. It's not how it works here. And there only seem to be a few people at the top of this U.S. soccer pyramid who really seem to get that. We can shout till, you know, we lose our voices, but it's frustrating with the situation as it is. Like, I'm not sure how this all ends. You know, I'm not sure if this has a happy ending, at least for the next few years. As a U.S. soccer fan, and I can only speak for myself, I only find excitement out of these young guys that are abroad right now. Like, I've watched a few Schalke games now that Weston McKennie's playing. I tune into Dortmund games. I watch
Fox Soccer, actually. Yeah,
exactly. Right? You know, I tune into Newcastle to see DeAndre Yedlin. I watch Hamburg to watch Bobby Wood. Like, I want to see these guys. And it's not that I wouldn't want to watch MLS, but Bill, you brought up a great point. I had no idea when the final was either. And they had like this big gap between the semifinal games. I had no idea when those were.
Like, there's a week.
It was like two and a half weeks, 3 weeks.
And then all of a sudden it showed up like on a Tuesday. And I was like, I don't remember this happening.
I think it may have even been a Wednesday or some.
Yeah, it always is
Wednesday
like
or
that.
Thursday. It's just a weird random day. The same kind of thing. I'm sitting there flipping through Twitter when I got home from work, and they're talking about Bradley and Altidore, and I'm like, wait a minute, what? I thought this was over. I thought this ended 3 weeks ago, and now they're playing another game.
Yeah. But they should be playing the regular season during that time.
I can't.
That's another topic.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of – that's one of the things. If we do get, you know, a candidate who is talking about all this change that does – if they do get elected, we got to temper expectations, I think, as far as how quickly and how many changes they're actually going to be able to make. There's so many things that need to change, you know. And that's certainly another conversation for another time, because – if once we go down that rabbit hole, we're not going to get out of it for another half hour. But before we're going to change it up. I want to throw one more thing out, just kind of on this whole, you know, MLS, some USSF type of thing. Our friends over at How's Ya Touch on Twitter. They're one of the more vocal accounts out there as far as going after the status quo. I just saw this and thought it was funny. They tweeted, "Ever notice how MLS always employs people who have lots of casual excitement about the game? Kind of casual excitement where they'll watch every Clasico but tweet endlessly about Shakira in the stands. Those people literally believe they're growing soccer in the U.S. I just thought that was funny.
It's true, though.
I just wanted to read that out there.
They cater to the casual demographic more than the soccer demographic, I feel.
Yeah, I thought that one was funny. So, but I know, you know, before we kind of wrap everything up, I want to send this over to Alex for, you know, a quick little rundown through some Champions League here.
Yeah, the Champions League knockout ties came out last week. And I mean, obviously Arsenal's not in them, but there's still some really intriguing ties here. I'm just going to run through them real quick.
I thought for sure we would have drawn Bayern Munich somehow.
Would have dropped down. Yeah. So we got Juventus versus Tottenham, Basel versus Manchester City, Porto versus Liverpool, Sevilla versus Manchester United, Real Madrid, PSG, Shakhtar versus Roma, Chelsea versus Barcelona, and Bayern versus Besiktas. Just want to kind of get a take from each of you is like maybe what tie out of those you're looking forward to the most, and then we can get some predictions.
I just want to say my first reaction to that was, what the hell happened to the rest of Europe? It's English teams and a couple Eastern European teams and Barcelona and Real Madrid. Like, what? That was just kind of strange. There's a lot of teams, and it's what kind of ties into Arsenal with the Europa League draw and how we thought we were going to get Dortmund. A lot of good teams got bumped down. But I think, you said it was Barcelona, Chelsea?
Yeah, that's
one. Right? That would be the one that I think is by far the most interesting for me.
What about you, Bill?
I'm going to go with Madrid and PSG. Definitely want to see that game, 7-6 every game, and there's like just a ton of goals, because that's probably what's going to happen. Chelsea Barcelona always has that lore about it, that game's always had some interesting stuff go on in it, so that'll probably take it, because there'll probably be something cool that'll happen there. Interested in Real Madrid Paris, because I think there'll be a lot of goals there, and I hope Juventus absolutely destroys Tottenham. I just want to throw that in there.
Yeah, let's start from that. Juventus-Tottenham, who do you think goes through there? Ian, we'll start with you.
Juventus.
Bill?
Juve.
Yeah, I'll go Juve as well. I think it'll be close. I see it probably like 3-2 aggregate. Mm-hmm. Basel versus Manchester City, I mean, I think that's City all the way.
Yeah.
No doubt. Yeah, Bill, I'm assuming you agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, Porto versus Liverpool. That one's kind of interesting, actually.
I think Liverpool gets through it just because they're going to prioritize that over the Premier League right now. I'd love to see them lose, though.
Yeah, I agree with Ian.
I'm going to take Porto for some reason. I don't know why.
Good.
But just because I want Liverpool to get knocked out. So that would make me happy. Sevilla versus Manchester United. That's an intriguing one. United had a very easy group in the group stages. Sevilla have kind of been inconsistent in the Champions League. So it's a tough one to call.
That's boring to me.
That's not a prediction, though. That's just
somebody's going to advance on a one to – it's going to be 1-1. Somebody's going to advance on away goal. Or 2-2, and somebody's going to advance on away goals. Probably United.
United.
I see United going through on some like deflected goal.
It's not going to be anything exciting.
Yeah,
you know, both teams are going to set up. So
yeah, I mean, Sevilla at least try to play United. You know, in a 2-leg tie, they're going to play conservative. Sevilla is going to try to take the game to them, but I'd probably go United. The one that stuck out to me was definitely Real Madrid PSG. I mean, you're talking two of the most expensive teams in the world. You got Ronaldo, Isco, Benzema, Bale, Kroos, Modric versus Neymar, Cavani, Mbappe, Verratti. I mean, the star power on display is just going to be amazing. I mean, that's a final right there. You're getting a final in the knockout.
Yeah, that's –
I personally – the way that PSG has been playing lately, I lean slightly towards them. The only thing with Madrid is their league campaign, at least in terms of winning it, is effectively over. So they really have to put all their eggs in this basket. And it's going to be one hell of a tie. I see it going. I see it going 4-3 PSG on aggregate.
I like PSG. I like the goal total to be a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. That's a shame that this game is happening in this round, but. Man, picking against United or Real Madrid to go out at this point in time. I'm going to do it, though. Yeah, it's PSG. I think your aggregate's more like 6-5, maybe 7-5. You're going to see a big number put up in one of those games.
Yeah, I'm going PSG. I don't think it's unreasonable to think Madrid will get knocked out. I mean, they might not, but I don't know. PSG just looks like they're flying. I'm going to go an even higher goal tally. I think it's going to be something like 8-7 or 9-7. I think there's going to be a big number in one of those games. So I'm going PSG. I just think they're going to be just too quick, scoring a lot, punishing.
This one's kind of tough to predict. Roma versus Shakhtar. Now Roma have been in good form in Serie A, so you know, Dzeko's been putting in the goals, and they do have a lot of talented attacking players. They're 5 points behind Inter in Serie A. They're in fourth place, right behind Juventus and Napoli and Inter. So tough one there. I'd probably lean Roma, just because of what I saw of Shakhtar in the group stage. I wasn't ridiculously impressed there.
I'm going to mix it up. We're going Shakhtar just because why the hell not?
I like it.
I don't have any other reason other than just trying to mix it up a little bit.
Shakhtar.
Wow.
I thought you were going to go Roma, so I thought it was going to kind of stand out as being the contrarian there. But
I thought I was going to stand out with Shakhtar.
Now, the tie that you mentioned, Ian, Chelsea-Barcelona, this one is tough for me. I can very plausibly see a scenario where Chelsea go through here. I think Barcelona just takes it, though. It's going to be close. I think you'll probably have a Messi masterclass in the Camp Nou. And I don't know. I could see Barcelona going on away goals. You know, I could see them going through.
It pains me to say it. I think Chelsea gets through. I don't think Barcelona's quite the Barcelona of old. I don't know. It's going to be pretty spectacular, though. I mean, there's nothing better than watching Messi on that stage. So it's really hard to go against Barcelona strictly because he can decide to do what he did for Argentina and single-handedly get him over the hump. I mean, I hope Barcelona just stomps them. I really do. But I think Chelsea gets through probably, like you said, probably on an away goal. And I'm not going to – I have no idea where it's going to be numbers-wise. But
so we got one Chelsea, one Barcelona. Bill, you're the tiebreaker on this one.
I want Barcelona to go through so badly, but I just have a feeling this is the year that Chelsea goes through, and I hate to say it, and I hate to pick Chelsea, but I have to go Chelsea.
All right, so two of you have Real Madrid and Barcelona out in the first knockout stage. That's crazy to think about. The last one is Bayern versus Besiktas. And actually, Besiktas looked really good in the group stage, I have to say. And there's a big Turkish population in Germany, so you know Bayern's not necessarily going to have a huge home field advantage in that leg. I think Bayern's got a little bit too much over two legs. They're finally starting to click with Jupp Heynckes and getting a lot of those attacking players into form. So I think Bayern go through probably 4-1 on aggregate.
Bayern loses.
Are you going to Besiktas?
I'm not serious.
That's sweet. Remember that sweet? Going to Besiktas?
Every new signing. Hey, coming to Besiktas.
I'm going Besiktas because I hate Bayern.
That's fair. I think this tie is going to have probably the biggest goal differential of any of them. I think Bayern clicks into Champions League form and just dusts them like an 8-1 type of aggregate, something along those lines.
Wow. So like Bayern versus Arsenal scoreline there.
Yeah.
pretty much.
We got that to look forward to. I mean, Arsenal, would we draw in the Europa League? Ostersunds? At least we didn't get we didn't get Dortmund, we didn't get Napoli, and we weren't I don't think Atletico was an option for us to draw. So
so the media is gonna be up Ostersunds. English manager Arsene Wenger, you know you're gonna hear some story or
Yeah.
But he brought him up from like four tiers or something, I think. So that's pretty good.
Yeah. So that'll, I mean, that is what it is. I find it hard to care too much about the Europa League at this point, but.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I live for it. Thursdays, baby.
Hey, man, that's a nice thing. Right now, I don't work Thursdays, so I can sit on my couch, watch the Europa League game.
There you go.
You know, it's got its perks. But, all right. So kind of before we wrap up, did everybody get to everything they wanted to get to tonight?
Yeah.
I think so. I think we hit the U.S. stuff pretty hard. So it's
I think we pretty much illustrated throughout the 40 minutes or so we talked about the U.S. and the Federation and all that. I think we laid out the web of conspiracy that links everything together. It's not exactly directly connected. It could be scattered all over the place, but that web of conspiracy is certainly there. Just would be nice if somebody would draw the lines and connect it for us. But on that note, if nobody else has anything else, we're going to send it over to Alex, AJ. Give us the rundown of where everybody can be found, please.
Yeah, so if you are a Twitter user, then you can find Ian at GunnersFan6. You can find Bill at AFCGooner0. If you can't find Bill there, you can find him arguing with any soccer journalist in existence. You can find myself at UFGoonerAJ. If you can't find me, just find anyone talking about Bruce Arena, and that's where I'll be. You can find the podcast at EuroSnobPod, facebook.com/EuroSnobPod. Subscribe on iTunes or check us out on Podomatic, EuroSnobPod.podomatic.com. We have this YouTube channel now, so check us out there. Unless our faces have scared you off from ever watching us again, then just listen to the audio. So I think I've covered all of our social media bases there. And if you can't find us, then quite frankly, you're not looking.
And if you're not on Twitter, you've probably never heard of us.
In which case, how did you get here? Honestly,
so you wouldn't be asked, very true. I just want to say to Tyler, who's apparently watching us tonight, he says we're wrong about something. For the record, no, we're not. We're always right. Never wrong.
I don't even know what being wrong feels like.
Tyler.
I don't know, man. But we're not wrong. So on that note, guys, we're going to call it quits for tonight. We'll be back probably in a couple weeks, but you can find us where Alex said you can find us. So let's keep this conversation going because God knows this conversation just needs to keep getting louder and louder until the Federation gets the changes that it really needs. So for everybody else and for me and Billy and AJ and signing off. Have a good night, everybody.
All right. Have a good one, guys.